We want to thank you for tuning in to StartupRaw.com. I'm Martin Williams. This is part three of the Side Hustle series. And in this part, we're going to discuss the importance of asset protection, the importance of credit and sweat equity, and getting something started in insurance. So we're gonna go over those four aspects, end it with sweat equity, and then I'll start to talk about in the next coming ones individual type of companies that people can start and the process through which they can go to get those things started with sweat equity and no funds. But in this one, what we're mainly going to talk about is we're going to talk about asset protection. We're going to talk about access to credit as a company, and we're going to talk about insurances, and then just close it off with a little word about sweat equity. So, and starting this out, it's important for you to understand now that I'm going to start talking about actual processes of companies that I'm not a licensed professional. I'm not an attorney. This is just for informational purposes. So please do your own research. Please consult licensed professionals before you do anything that can cause you to lose all your money. So, and getting started, let's talk about asset protection. Most people start a company and they think that the first thing they need to do is that they need to get their LLC, get business cards, and get all get a corporation EIN or TIN number, and then get a brick and mortar place, get a phone number for the place, and then they have a business. You don't have a business until you have a customer. So that's a backwards way of doing it. You get your service together, you get your product together, you get your first customers, then you go get these processes in place. Because you don't have a company until you have a product that a customer needs and a customer is willing to exchange their cash for. Once they start to exchange their cash for that, then you have a company, okay? So that's what makes a company, not the paperwork. The paperwork just means it's taxed a certain way and that you're recognized as a corporate entity, not a sole proprietorship. So, or doing business as, DBA is what it's known as. So, whatever the company name is that you pick. So it's important to understand that up front you don't want to spend all that money to start a company. You want to get your company going and then protect your asset, which is the company, once you see that it can produce revenue, okay? Otherwise, you're spending upfront money that is not necessary because you never created anything that went anywhere. So always remember in getting started that you create your asset, you get it going. Once you have a customer, then you have a company. Then you could start to think about getting that corporate name, not being under a sole proprietorship anymore or doing business as, but then you could start to talk about the protections now. Why? Because now that you have a customer, now you can have some liability, okay? So you want to start to protect yourself with asset protection first, okay? So let's talk about asset protection and what that means, okay? Asset protection is your corporate veil. And corporate veils will vary based upon what type of company you own and or what type of company you start, so to speak, and what type of industry it is, what you're selling. In other words, are you a landlord and you have properties that you're renting out, or are you selling a product and service? So depending on what you're doing depends on the best suitable asset protection for what you're doing, which is available out there. So, like for instance, if you're getting a real estate property, well, then you're going to want an LLC, limited liability corporation, and you're going to want to have each property in their own LLC and have separate bank accounts for each property and have separate bookkeeping for each property, because if you mix any of those funds or any of that paperwork or any of your payments from one property to another and one gets sued and their prosecutor does legwork and their due diligence and they see that a payment was made from or payments from one account paid for another property, another LLC for something else, they could tie them together and make them both liable. So that would be defeating the purpose of you having asset protection on a property. You see, because the purpose of asset protection is its own entity, it's its own business with its own bank account, its own paperwork, its own bookkeeping, its own CPAs, its own real estate attorney. You see where I'm going at? Everything's got to be separate in order for you to have the fullness of the protection of that asset. If you have multiple LLCs, multiple properties, and you're mixing the paperwork, you're mixing the bank accounts, you're mixing the payments from one account to pay something in another LLC liability or payment or expense, then guess what? That can be tied together in a lawsuit, and then the lawsuit can take whatever equity you have in each one of those, not just the one where the initial liability is being charged against, so to speak. So you want to make sure that you're separating your paperwork and keeping it separated from LC, LLC to LLC. So that would be what you would need for real estate. And I've seen one guy had it set up to where he had a limited partnership, and a limited partnership because the 98% general partner, 2% liable partner, and then have each LLC underneath the ownership, each separate LLC for each property underneath the ownership of the LP. And that way, you know, if anything would be tied together, the LP would be sued, and then it's only liable for 2%. So not the 98% of the general. So the point is that the other reason why you do asset protection is you're protecting against your own personal liability, meaning that if you have something in a corporate veil, as it's its own entity and it shields you from any liability personally, so they can't attack any of your personal assets that you own underneath your personal name. Only what's in the LLC and that property where the incident took place that they're suing you for. So that would be a good structure for property. For instance, if you're a small business and you're trying to create a smaller tax liability for yourself, well, some people have looked at the S corp, and the reason why they look at the S corp is because they could take a small, minuscule salary and then take everything at the end of the year as a distribution or a dividend, only subject to 20 to capital gains, 20% tax, not the up to 39% tax. But the problem is with there are some issues with having an S corp. There are some limitations, so you want to look into that to see if that would be the best route for you personally and what you're doing. It's my understanding in certain states you have to do an LLC, and then you have to file a certain form in order for that state to recognize that LLC as an S corp. So, in order for you to function as an S corp, it's important to understand that if you get a C corporation, that a C corporation has double taxation, 35% corporate tax, and then it gets taxed again whenever that money passes to you. So unless you're a huge company with 500 employees or more, you want to probably stay away from a C corp. Plus, you have to have your articles, and you have to do minutes, and you have to have shareholders. And so I know for a C corp, you have to have so many shareholders, and if you get an S corp and you grow to a certain amount and you exceed shareholders, then you have to move to a C corp. So depending on what level of business you're at and how huge you grow depends on what type of corporate structure you're gonna want to have over you to have the greatest benefit for you. But in 99% of the cases for a small business, an LLC seems to be adequate for most small corporations. And what happens with an LLC is usually it can have one member, but usually there's a managing member and just another member. And that those two members form the LLC. And at the end of the year, the LLC is not taxed, but what happens is they do 2K1s, which are 1065 forms, and the profits are distributed equally among both members, and then the members are taxed individually at their personal income brackets. But a way for you to experience some savings is for you to create your LLC. It's usually good for most small companies if that's the route you're going to go. And limited liability corporation, two members, one's got to be managing, one has the other one's just regular member. And then you can create what's called a SEP IRA, which is a self-employed IRA, and put up to $23,000 in that tax free. So $23,000 of your money would not be taxed. And if you're a married couple and you're both members, you could probably do two SEP IRAs separately, $23,000 on each one. I know that you could pay your children up to $6,000 a year each tax free. So in the company. So that's a way for you to not pay taxes on that much money, depending on how many children you have that are of age to do something for your company, something minuscule, so to speak, where you just pay them something like $6,000 a year for each child. So these are just some things you can do on top of the write-offs that you get from having an actual LLC as well, and then whatever's left over at the end of the year, that would be taxed. But you're getting the benefits of pre-taxed money for your IRAs higher than normal IRA. Since you're self-employed, it can go up to that amount, and then you could get your own health insurances and stuff like that tax paid for before taxes instead of getting the income at the end of the year and paying it with after-tax money through your 1065s. So that's another savings. And health insurance is expensive for a whole family. You spend up to $10,000 to $12,000 a year for it. So you're realizing that tax, that money is paying for the actual insurance premiums tax-free. So you're not paying with 25% to 35% taxes after that money passes to you when they get an insurance. You're saving that money there. You're saving that amount of money up to $23,000 for each managing member on a SEP IRAs. And you see, so there are ways for you to limit your tax liabilities, and then that is another way you're bringing wealth to yourself, is by minimizing your taxes. And those SEP IRAs, you just make them self-directed to where you're directing the money where you want them to go. And if you know a collapse is coming, you just take that money out of stocks and you put it in bonds, because bonds appreciate whenever the stock market goes down. And then whenever the stocks get real low and you experience the deflation and it increases your purchasing power, then you go buy stocks on sale. So, there's cycles in everything. Commodities have a 30-year cycle. So you just shift that money around so you're shifting it around prior to the collapses through each cycle, so that whenever your money's doing this, it's not doing this at the end of a cycle and then doing this. And so you're catching it at the top of the cycle, you're putting it at the bottom of the next cycle. Whenever this cycle deflates and that one inflates, then you got it at the top of that, you shift it at another cycle whenever it's low, and then when that inflates, you take it out the top, you put it in the other one that's low, and when that inflates, that's how you get increased gains. But once again, I'm not a licensed professional. This is not advice. I'm just talking about my personal experience and what I do with self-directed. So the point is that you're in control of your financial destiny. That's the whole point we're talking about here, is asset protection, you protecting your wealth, putting it in the right corporate veils that shield you from personal liability. And depending on what kind of company you have, will depend on what asset protection works best for you based on what field you're going into. So I don't know what field you're going into, so this isn't advice. This is just me talking to you about some examples of how asset protection shields you and keeps you protected from your personal assets getting any liability whenever your company's or your company gets sued, or so to speak, because it's in its own separate corporate entity. So, and shifting to the next part, which is credit, most companies that are smaller, LLCs are usually fine for that. But once again, you want to seek a licensed professional attorney that can guide you in that. So you don't need an attorney to file. And before I move to the next thing, important to understand, you don't need an attorney to file a corporation for you. You can go to your online local secretary of state for whatever state you're in, and you can apply on your secretary of state website. If you don't feel comfortable with going to the business part of the website where you file and filling out the paperwork and sending and just using a credit card to pay the $99 fee or the $75 fee or the $35 fee, it varies based on what state you're in, then you would want to go to LegalZoom or something like that and just pay the $199 and then just fill out the paperwork and they'll do the filings for you. And most people, you can't use a P.O. box whenever you're setting up in a corporation in your state. It's got to be a physical address, so just keep that in mind. I would caution you not to use your own personal home address. What you can do is you can go to a licensed, what's called a registered agent that's in your state. And registered agents are an address where the state can serve papers in a business that's open from 9 to 5 Monday through Friday, to whether it be state papers, whether it be a subpoena or whatever, that there is a person that they can come to and actually serve. And then once they receive that documentation, they scan it and they send it over to you, however you designate them to send it over to you, whether it's through mail, whether it's through email, however you designate them to send paperwork to you. So that's what a registered agent does. And you sign up for that registered agent service and you use their address prior to doing your filing. So that's a way you can use an address to shield your personal address and still have a company where legal documents can be presented 9 to 5 Monday through Friday, because there's somebody in that office to receive them at that address, in that registered agent's office. So that's something just to keep in mind. You can sign up for registered agent at $199, I believe, a year extra at LegalZoom, which is more expensive than you spending like $49 yourself to just go to something like registeredagent.com or something like that, and then going to your local Secretary of State website, whatever state you're in, and then filling out the paperwork and just paying the fee with the credit card. Once you do that, whether it's LegalZoom or whether it's there, LegalZoom will get your EIN number for you, or your TIN, which is, if you're going to have employees, you need an EIN, employee identification number. If you're not going to have employees, you just need a TIN, which is a tax identification number for your corporate entity, which is your company, your LLC, or whatever you're incorporating. So once you would get your paperwork, if you do it yourself through your local secretary website, state site, after you get your registered agent address, then you would get your paperwork emailed to you. Then you go to the IRS.gov, and then you go to TIN registration, and you need to wait. Sometimes it takes a couple hours or a couple days for them to give you the information that the IRS is going to need for you from your corporation filing, for you to give them that proper the proper numbers and stuff for them to give you a TIN number. You don't want to get your TIN number ahead of time. You want to make sure you have all your paperwork sent over to you via email, or however your state website's going to get it to you, prior to you getting your TIN number, okay? Because they have to link that TIN number, EIN number, to your actual corporation. So they need the actual corporate filing numbers and all the information that the state gives you in order for you to register correctly for it. So just keep that in mind, or you can do it all through LegalZoom. Once again, I'm just using this as an example to tell you that you don't have to spend a lot of money paying an attorney if you don't want to. You can do it yourself on a website for your state. Just watch a video or something for it, or you can go to LegalZoom, and they have attorneys that work for LegalZoom that'll answer your questions on a thing, and they'll do the whole process for you. But as far as what type of entity would best work for you, well, then you need to consult an attorney for that. And I'm not giving you advice. This is just information, and I'm not a licensed professional, once again. So I'm just telling you that there are options for you to incorporate. I'm not telling you what option to take, and I'm telling you to do your own research and consult an attorney. I'm not one, okay? So the liability for your actions rests on you. That's why you must do your own research, so, and consult licensed professionals. So now let's move to credit, okay? Getting credit for a corporation is not the same as getting credit for you personally. And yes, you can have credit to a corporation. You don't want to use your personal name for your corporate credit. You should never tie your personal guarantee to corporate credit. I would recommend you not do that, okay? There is a process that you follow in order to get corporate credit. And the process is, first you need to have the proper licensing documents, like the Articles of Corporation, your corporate number, which is a TIN, an EIN number, a company telephone number, and have it listed locally through the local searches, because no one's gonna give you corporate credit unless that's a viable lender, like a bank, unless they see you're legit. Are you listed on local searches? Do you have a company telephone? Do you have articles of incorporation? Have you set up a company bank account? So the next thing you'll want to do is go get a company bank account with your articles of corporation, your TIN number or EIN number. And then that's the next level of getting legitimacy as a company for credit. Now, when we get credit, our credit reports or FICO score is linked to Experian, TransUnion, or there's one other one, it's just skipping me. So, but we get instant pulls a lot quicker than the actual TransUnion pull or Experian that goes through LexisNexis. So LexisNexis has access to all your information, and that's why you get instant approvals whenever you file for something, like right there on the spot, and you get an instant approval. It's not from the three like TransUnion or Experian, it's from LexisNexis that you get that instant approval. Now, those really aren't the ones that are used for corporate credit. So corporate credit is a whole other rating agency and a whole other process. So it's important to understand that you're not going to go through the same channels to get corporate credit as you would for personal credit. So let's talk a little bit about what you would need to do to get corporate credit. And I already laid down the first couple of steps you would have to take for legitimacy to get to that point to where you can get the corporate credit. First, you need to have the Articles of Corporation, the EIN, TI, or TIN number, your bank account, legitimate phone number, listing on the searches for having a company. If you want to go that last route, it just shows a level of legitimacy. And then you want to start with what's called trade lines. Okay, this is very important. If you don't go this, if you do not follow this process, you will not get the credit. Okay, and it's going to take you 6 months to a year to go through the three steps or channels to get this credit. Okay, to where you could start to really get access to a good amount of credit, which is over $100,000, $200,000, that kind of credit for your company, where you're not personally liable for it, but your company has a credit score that is getting that actual loans for. So trade lines you want to start with, something like Uline, something like Staples, something like a gas card. Those are what's called trade lines, and they automatically report to the corporate bureaus. There are two specific corporate bureaus that you can get credit through. I'm not going to tell you what they are. Some people think you should sign up for it first. My process is you get the trade lines first. You just do a couple of small little purchases on those trade lines, and then like office supply, a couple of tanks of gas, pay it off at the end of each month, 100% in full. And within 3 to 4 months, they're going to automatically report you to those two agencies, and an account's going to be open automatically for your company in those two agencies based off of those reports. So once you do that, then you can go to a bank because you're starting to show credit with your through those particular trade lines, and then you can start the second option with a prepaid card through your company for a Visa for up to like 6 months, like $1,000, and your company name through your TIN or your EIN number, and then have that amount of money that stays in the account or something that actually secures that particular credit card. Within 6 months of paying that, charging a few things, paying it on time every month for those 6 months, then the bank will give you a unsecured line of credit on that Visa. if you hold certain amounts of money. Now, this is a different rating system that a lot of people won't know, but bank actually has its own rating system based on the amount of cash that people have in their bank accounts for companies. If you hold, it's a 1 to 100, it's a 1 to 100 rating score. If you have $10,000 in your account for 3 months or more, you get high up there on that rating scale. If you have like 20 to 30,000, up to $100,000 for 3 consecutive months, you can get up to that 100 point level. And then this is whenever you start to get access to the actual personal loans from the bank, because the bank goes off of its own personal rating system for corporations based on the amount of cash that they keep in their bank account for up to 3 consecutive months at a time. If it's at that threshold to where you're at that high level of credit worthiness, close to that 80 to that 100, you can get access to a lot of capital, $50,000, $100,000 loans. You see, so the point is these are the processes you want to take, and this whole process can take you up to 2 years, 6 months to 2 years, for you to really start to establish corporate credit to where you have access to a good amount of capital to really grow your company. So that's the second level of what you need to understand, that corporate credit is not the same as personal credit. And you should always try to steer away from personally being liable for anything that your corporation does personally, and getting loans or anything like that. So this is the process you want to follow, so that you don't have to guarantee any of your stuff for your corporate loans. You want to follow that process. So, and you must have all of the stuff on the front end first before you start to apply for this credit, or they're not going to look at you as a legitimate company. So understand that. Now let's go to the third part, where we're going to talk about insurances. Insurances, a lot of people think they can run companies without proper insurances, but what they don't realize is they really open themselves up to a tremendous amount of liability. And running a company, there are a couple of insurances. I'm not going to go into this. We're already over half an hour. I'll just name a few kinds of insurances, and for you to understand what types there are out there, so you can look into them yourself based on what kind of company you want to start. Liability insurance, like if you're a contractor, for instance, it's usually wise, and most companies, banks, for instance, will require you to have up to $1 million of liability insurance if you're a contractor, for instance. So liability insurance, it's very important insurance. I'm going to go over the four particular ones. Workman's comp is a very important and necessary insurance. Like in Texas, for instance, you're not legally required to carry workman's comp, but if you run a corporation and you don't have workman's comp, I don't care what the state law is, you open yourself up to a lot of liability. So you should always have workman's comp if you have employees. So workman's comp would be the second insurance that's important. Liability, workman's comp, professional insurance. Professional insurance is very important insurance to have. Errors and omissions insurance. If you do anything in consulting or something like that, errors and omissions insurance, because you won't be held liable for some advice you gave or anything like that. Your insurance will cover that liability for you. So those are just four that I would recommend. Obviously, if you're a landlord or anything like that, you're going to have the necessary insurances for that. I don't need to go into that. The banks are going to require that. So that goes without saying. So if you're not doing that, these are the insurances you will want to look into. So In closing, it's important to understand that there's two ways you can start a business. You can start a business through a loan, which I think is the worst way to start one, or through sweat equity, through knowledge, through educating yourself, through putting your time in. And that is the safest and most guaranteed way that you're gonna have success. And the next couple parts of series, we'll start to talk about specific types of companies you can start and go through the process of how to start each one using this process. So I'm Martin Williams with StartupBroad.com. I hope this brings you some value. See you in the next one.